Welcome to the Body Bag Podcast. I'm your host, Broker R. Dave, and with me, like always, Chris Thomas.
Hello, my name is Christopher Thomas. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
And yes, we are coming at you with another double feature. It's inconceivable.
Oh, there's more. Oh, I thought there was going to be more. Inconceivable.
Inconceivable. I was hoping you would jump in with a... That word doesn't mean what you think it means.
I guess because I was playing the Ignacio Montoya already. So, like, you keep saying that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Yeah. If you can't tell, the first one we have this double feature is going to be The Princess Bride. Yes, we are in 1987.
This used to be the movie that whenever I would tell people, yeah, I've never seen Princess Bride, that was the movie that I got guilted into seeing because of, you know, you're tired of hearing everybody say. And ever since I watched it was years ago, I hadn't watched it since. So this was the first time in many years that I've actually
watched it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my first time watching it. And also, we're going to be closing out with The Lost Boys.
I'm going to just go and say straight off the bat that... this was like if this the good thing this isn't a versus match because these were very close to me in score wise.
I have about a point and a half difference, so yeah, still fairly close.
Because it was the 87 was a great year for movies.
Yeah,
it was a great era.
It really was, and the fact that this is my first time watching The Princess Bride, and probably the first time I've watched Lost Boys in.
Years.
100 plus years, so it was a good day for me watching movies, so.
Two very different movies, but I think both very enjoyable. We were in the 80s, which is my, like, favorite decade.
Yeah.
So, let's see how, because when I first saw The Princess Bride years ago, I remember thinking, okay, yeah, it was an okay movie. And then, so let's see if some years pass, maybe I've gained a little perspective.
Yeah. So, we're going to start off with The Princess Bride. Just a quick kind of summary of the movie. Basically, grandson's staying home from school sick, and his grandfather comes in to read him the story of The Princess Bride. Which does this thing where it kind of breaks, like, the kind of fourth wall of the story. Because the main movie is
the actual story.
Yeah,
it pauses every so often to remind you this is a kid's story being told to a little kid.
Yeah, it, you know, you can tell your grandfather kind of changes the story to go at the whims of his grandson.
Who initially was reluctant, like, oh, granddad, I just want to talk about sports and stuff like that. I don't want to listen to no little fairy tale thing.
Yeah.
But he slowly starts getting into it, and as he does, the grandfather is like, well, I'll change this around a little bit because he's getting into the story.
Yeah. And basically the main story follows Princess Buttercup, who she loves a farmer boy. Who goes across sea to make a living, but he's killed by a pirate. So she decides, she ends up that she's going to marry a prince.
Prince Humperdinck.
Humperdinck. And before that happens, she's kidnapped by three bandits, and as they're getting away with her, they're caught by a man in black who beats Indio Montoya in a fencing match first, beats Andre the Giant in a fist fight. And beats Fazizi,
the Sicilian.
The Sicilian, in a game of wits, gets her, and he, you know, takes her away. And at first, she's like, you know, doesn't know who he is.
Well, she thinks that he is the dreaded pirate Roberts.
Yeah. And then she finds out he's actually Wesley, her long-lost love.
Used to be her farmhand, and then they grew a love, but then he went away, and now he's back.
Yeah, and he kind of explains what he's been up to. They start to run away together, get caught by the prince and his people.
Which, I'll just say, Prince played by Chris Sarandon, who, weirdly enough, the last time we saw him, he was playing a vampire.
Yeah, and so Wesley gets captured. The prince sells Princess Buttercup. He's gonna take Wesley back to a ship. He doesn't. Takes him down to the pitted spared torture room. Princess is like, I don't want to marry you. I want to be with Wesley. And from there, Indio Montoya and Andre the Giant save Wesley from the pit. They all go stop the wedding before it happens. And they all kind of get happy endings. Except for the prince who was planning on killing a princess to start a war once they were married.
Nah, he gets it. He doesn't get a happy.
And that was a quick sum up of The Princess Bride. In case, I know most people have seen it, the quick sum up doesn't do it justice, because this is a pretty fantastic movie.
Doesn't it just make you, didn't you just feel good watching it?
Really, you really do. And like the first thing I noticed, it was such a random thought, is that Princess Buttercup looks so much like the girl who starred in Summer of 84, which made me like that movie even more.
I have to go back
Because
and
I was like,
read.
wow, they really nailed that look.
And so you said that this was your
Viewing of it,
first ever viewing, huh? Oh, so you were later to
I've
the
seen
party
like
than I was.
clips, I've seen clips, but never watched the entire movie. But yeah, it's a real like feel good movie. If you need something to put you in a good mood, yeah, Princess Bride will do that.
And it being years since I saw it the first time, and leaving the first time going, that was okay. I watched it again, really. I think maybe I gave it a harder time because I was kind of like guilted into watching it. Like, how have you not seen it? It's worth all the hype. When I rewatched it, I was giggling, I was having fun. I love the fact that it reminds you that it is a children's story, so it's allowed to be ridiculous. Like, I have this in some of the breakdown where I'm like,
It's super goofy at times,
it's goofy
but
and it's
it's
absurd.
supposed to
So,
be, yeah.
yeah.
And it
And
uses it to like play to its strengths in that vein of things.
yeah, like there'll be things that happen, like solutions are just like conveniently found, plot armor conveniently like revealed, and alliances like quickly made. But it's like, well, yes, it's an absurd world, but it's normal in this universe.
It's just one of those movies that I will probably go back and watch every now and then again, now that I've seen it.
Yeah, and you did bring up a good point where you said that the grandfather's constantly changing the story to make, the kid happy and stuff like that. That's how these things conveniently happen. Like, oh, well, no, he didn't die. He miraculously came back from the dead when
It's
they
a
took him
miracle
over to,
maker,
yeah, they went to a miracle worker and he brought him back to life.
but he can't move.
But he can't move, but he still uses his wits in order to save the day.
And
So,
it
yeah.
still like gets to me that Indigo Montoya goes on, Mandy Patinkin goes on to become Gideon in Criminal Minds.
Yeah. That's the
That
only
is
other thing I
wild to me.
really that's the only other thing I really know him from.
And then Vizzini voiced Rex in Toy Story and still acting. He was just in Young Sheldon.
Oh yeah, he's in a couple of things.
And then Princess Buttercup went on to play Claire Underwood in House of Cards. That was big, like five,
Oh,
six years ago.
wait, what's her name?
The actress' name is Robin Wright. She
Robin
played
Wright.
Claire Underwood in House of Cards, yeah.
Isn't that the same actress who played Jenny in Forrest Gump?
Double check. I'm really sure.
So, sorry to make you stop the podcast for this.
I'm checking her filmography now. Yeah, she did play Jenny in Forrest Gump as well.
Oh, okay. I was just making sure I got the right actress.
No, what's funny is I checked her filmography before we even started recording. I completely missed that.
It's like the only two things I know her from.
But yeah, she did a pretty good job in her role. I gotta say, like, the acting was pretty good, even though there was overacting. But in this movie, it works.
Everything goofy and everything that would usually feel off in a movie that was taking itself seriously works in this.
Yeah, because you could tell that everyone knew in this production, like, we're not going to take this super serious. Like,
Yeah. Like, if it knows how ridiculous and absurd children's stories can be, and it again, it gets away with stuff that wouldn't get gotten away with if a movie was not self-aware. I think that's the best way to put it. If the movie was not fully aware of itself, all of these problems would not work. Because you figure if you just take away the meta and it would be a pretty generic story.
It's a pretty bare bones story, like star-crossed lovers type story.
Gets whisked away to a evil prince, and he has to come save her. I mean, that is at bare bones what the story is.
And but I think, it's the fact that it's self-aware and has a meta, and then also like the characters as well.
Yeah, the characters are just so damn likable.
Yeah, like every character you're supposed to like, even some that you don't like, Vizzini, you're not really supposed to like, but he's kind of funny.
Everybody gives memorable performances.
Yes.
Like we're talking about this movie and talking about Lost Boys. Like the I think this one I'll just say has a lot more standout moments.
Yeah.
Obviously, everybody knows who Inigo Montoya is.
Yeah.
But all the characters have, except for Buttercup. Buttercup really doesn't have much of a personality,
No, she's just damsel in distress.
which is what her character is supposed to be.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, I'm here to be saved, and that's it.
Yeah,
Like, her
even like the.
standout moment in the movie is after she finds out the Treadfire Roberts is Wesley and he's tumbling down the hill, she just kind of tumbles down the hill after him.
Little moments like that, just, he's tumbling down the thing, as you, it's just so goofy and funny, made me
Yeah.
laugh.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of, it's so funny because the stuff that was making me laugh are all kind of just dumb moments like that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, at one point Buttercup is set to betroth the evil prince, and she's asleep, and she's dreaming about her wedding day, and she gets introduced to the crowd, and then all of a sudden you just hear this old woman from the crowd go, boo, boo, and I just laughed my ass off at that,
Yeah.
just boo this woman, boo.
It was great. Because I honestly didn't expect that. Like, I was like, oh, that raggedy looking woman's gonna do something. But wasn't
Just,
gonna expect her to go boo.
it's a dumb thing to just kind of break down laughing at, but it's just the ridiculous of like this big marriage thing, and just boo this princess, and just sticking her finger in her face, boo.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a contender for my scene of the movie, in
Oh.
all honesty, but. Yeah, it the pr a lot of the, it doesn't go out of its way to make you laugh. It just is naturally funny.
Yeah, like on paper, this movie doesn't seem like it would be good.
No, it doesn't.
Like, if I read a script for this, I'd just be like,
I don't know why it works, in all
yeah,
honesty. I
I
couldn't
just
tell
feel
you.
like I'm good on this. And then, but watching it, it's like you could tell this is one of those movies where everyone is on the same page, from production company to producers, screenwriter to the director to the actors to the PAs on set. Everyone was just on the same page here.
Everybody like knew what they were doing, and they probably had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I have to go and see a making of or something. I'd be very interested to see if the crew had as much fun as I would think they would have.
Like it seems like they had a lot of fun. Like I've seen watched some Andre the Giant documentaries, and everyone from this cast talks so well about him.
Yeah, they said he was a lot of fun, and he was cool on set.
And for those that don't know anything about wrestling, Andre the Giant was like a huge name wrestler in like the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, he was a massive dude.
Well, in like the
Like,
80s, he couldn't really move anymore. He was more of just a wrestling attraction because he was so big.
yeah, but I mean, he used that to his advantage. People just wanted to
Yeah,
come and see him.
exactly. Like they still talk about him versus Hulk Hogan.
And even he, I mean, even he, I'm sure, I don't know exactly like what his performance was when he was. I knew he was a wrestler, and I've seen little clips. I don't know what his like persona at wrestling was. But when you watched this, did you just see Andre the Giant, or did he kind of like act like how he usually acted in the ring, or?
Like I said, I didn't watch, much of that wrestling back in the 80s before my time. I just saw his mat a couple of his matches. But from like clippets from like his documentary and stuff, it just kind of seemed like that was Andre. It seemed like he wasn't even acting. That's just who Andre was like this just lovable big guy.
That's how he always came across. That's how he got. That's how he comes across in the movie too. He's just, oh, this big lovable like big brute who's. Did you have a particular scene that stuck out to you that you thought was pretty good?
Yes, the like the lead up to the duel between Wesley and Inigo Montoya. Well, they're just so nice and polite to each other.
Just like this mutual respect in battle of two warriors.
They just seem like two friends talking before like a sporting event.
Yeah, I love that line. He's like, "You seem a decent fellow. I hate to kill you. Oh, you seem a decent fellow. I hate to die."
Yeah.
I was like, I love these two.
Or when he's trying to toss down the rope, he's like, "How do I know you won't cut it? Would you trust me if I say I'm a Spaniard?" No.
I swear to you. Oh, hey, is that the train I hear in the background?
The train is here, yeah.
The train is here.
Yeah.
Also a fan of Princess Bride.
Yeah. Or like right before that when he's like, "This isn't as easy as it looks." He's just climbing up the cliff. So I was like, "Sorry to
Yeah.
bother you, but could you hurry up a little bit?"
It's like a 10, that's like 10 minutes like into the movie,
Yeah.
and you're just already liking everybody. You've
Yeah.
been, and again, even the people who are supposed to be the bad guys, like the main bad guy is Prince Humperdinck, but he's just written so over the top villainous that it's hilarious. I mean, he even has a secret torture room in a hollowed out tree. It's like it's ridiculous. Again, you read this on paper, you're like, this sounds stupid.
But yeah, it's just one of those movies that you can't help but enjoy.
Did you choose this because you just felt it was time?
Yeah, I felt like it was time, and I was like, we haven't hit like the 80s yet in these double features. So I was looking at movies in the 80s, and I saw The Princess Bride. I was like, oh, that's good. And then I saw that Lost Boys is also the same year, so I was like, that works, yeah.
And like that's a good afternoon.
Yeah, just
Well, it's,
I know you really like the Lost Boys, so.
yeah, and I'll get into that when we get into Lost Boys. But okay, so why don't we you want to start off with technicals or yeah, you want to start off with technicals?
Technicals, it was a tough to score because some of the technicals are just so goofy, and it's just
Me personally, like, well, I'll get into it when.
like the man-sized rodents,
Yes.
those are just so silly and stuff. But for the most part, it's pretty good. I went 7.2.
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually gave it a whole point higher and gave it an 8.2.
Give an 8.2. All right.
The set pieces are very fun to look at, and you get a lot of them. You're on a boat at one point, you're at the top of a cliff edge on another, you're in a meadow at one point, and a castle. So you get a fair amount of cool, fun little, fairy tale set pieces.
You know,
And
I didn't really think about it that way, but now that you said that, I think I'm gonna up it to a 7.7, give it a half point up.
okay.
I never really thought about all that, yeah. Because there's a lot of really great set design on this one.
And they all look like, at any point, it all looks like it could also have been a stage play.
Yeah.
Especially that fight between Inigo and Wesley. The duel that they have looks like it could have been right there on the stage, and I mean that in a positive way.
Yeah.
And to what you were mentioning about like that giant rodent, yes, it looked goofy, and I remember saying aloud when I saw it, I was like, "This looks goofy," but I personally just thought it added to its charm.
Yeah.
Again, I just chalk up anything fantastical or weird to, is that it's a fairy tale book.
Yeah.
So I gave it an 8.2.
Yeah, all right.
On a technical.
And the story, it's a super silly but easy to follow good story. So I gave it an 8.3.
I'm right there with you. I gave it an 8.4.
8.4? All right.
Yeah, I said the same thing. Easy to follow. Not we'll go into Lost Boys, but comparing these two has a lot more standout moments
Yeah.
and more memorable moments. And it just does a good job of being absurd.
Yeah.
But they act like it's just normal.
Yeah. Acting in this movie is pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
And then enjoy, like everyone could tell that's listening, we enjoy this movie. I went 8.5.
I went 8.4.
8.4? All right.
Yeah, this I was glad that you chose this, and having watched it again, I'm surprised I let so much time go by between watching it again. It really is just a fun movie to just, if it's on, I'm watching it kind of movie.
Yeah, so total score, I gave it a 24.5 out of 30. You gave it a 25 out of 30. So average score of 24.75 out of 30, which it's a pretty good spot for it to be in.
Oh yeah, that's a it's definitely higher up on the list.
Yeah.
So oh, that's a well, we can go into it when we rate the next one. But yeah, and on to maybe about as equally entertaining but a very different movie altogether, The Lost Boys.
Yeah, Lost Boys.
So I guess I'll take the reins on this one.
right.
Well, first off, thank you for th you know what? Thank you for listening when I talk. You knew that I was a Lost Boys fan. And when I think vampire movies, it's this one and Interview with a Vampire. For some reason, those are the two that always stick out to me when I think vampire movie. I just thought for a quick thing, real quick. I don't know how many vampire movies are you if you're well versed into vampire movies, but do you have a this is my favorite vampire portrayal and this is my least favorite vampire portrayal?
My favorite portrayal of vampires is from the original show. Like, the Michelson vampires are probably my favorite. Yeah, because I don't really dig into vampires too much. And, like, my worst portrayal is probably, like, the cliche Twilight ones.
I don't think Twilight is cliche.
No, like, it's cliche to just kind of shit on that movie.
Oh, I thought you
So
meant
fuck,
like
yeah.
this. I thought you meant the story of Twilight is cliche. I was
No.
like, it's a lot of things, but that's wrong with it. But being cliche,
No, it's just cliche to kind of shit on this movie, but kind of
yeah,
it.
yeah. I'm gonna hop right on there with you and say because I did watch. I've seen the first one,
Yeah.
and that was enough. And I got roped into seeing the last one. And yeah, it's just as bad. I was squirming. I was like, oh my God, this is. And I had no one to next to me that I could make fun of it with because my sister loves it and she but anyway, okay, it was just a gauging your scale.
It's a wild scale, yeah.
Yeah, but okay, so I guess synopsis of the movie, and I'm gonna do this one's gonna be a little bit lengthier than your quick sum up was,
Okay.
because first off, classic setup for a horror movie, a family moves to this mysterious town.
Yeah.
And I believe it's called Santa Carla over in California.
In my mind,
And
I thought that it was like Santa Cruz, which I'm guessing that's what it's based on, because that's where it was shot, but
okay.
yeah.
And it's a mother and her two sons, Sam and Michael. And they got a bunk with old mom's grand or mom's dad, their grandpa, because she just recently got divorced. And they make a point to say this. Unlike most women, through a divorce settlement, she didn't come out with half of anything.
Yeah.
She just left, and now they're bunking with granddad. So this is where I'm going to divide this into three parts because that way you can hear everybody's story. We're going to have Michael's story, Sam's story, and the mother's story, and then they all converge at the end.
Yeah.
So we got Michael. Michael's the older brother, and he's checking out the nightlife, and then he fails for the classic honeypot.
Yep.
Sees this hot girl from across the way over at the boardwalk and starts pursuing her. Even after he sees that she likes to party with would-be hoodlums, leather-cladded hoodlums. But the power of, they say, the power of boners is compelling, so he's like, I'm not gonna let these street toughs intimidate me. I'm gonna prove myself to them.
Yeah.
They go on a drag race at one point, and the head of the leather-bound gang, his name is David, I believe.
Yep, played by Kiefer
David,
Sutherland
played by Kiefer Sutherland.
from 24.
He might actually be my favorite portrayal of a vampire. Just
He was really good in this movie.
completely 80s'd out and a vampire.
Yeah.
And so David, he's kind of taken a liking to Michael, or at least he likes fucking with him.
Yeah.
That he even takes him and shows him the their old hideout, which is an abandoned was it a hotel that was like collapsed?
It was one of the biggest resorts until the 1906 San Francisco earthquake hit, and it being right on the vault got swallowed up into the ground.
Yeah, not a bad hideout though. It's a cool little, you
Yeah,
know.
it's pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, as far as hideouts go, I'd say it's pretty cool. It's all like old antiquey looking stuff, and they got plenty of room. And they keep screwing with them, at least David does, like to the point where you think, did they like lace something? Because they're making him hallucinate that he's eating. They get Chinese takeout and
Yeah.
they're eating rice, and then he's like, how do you like your maggots? And he looks down and there's maggots in there, but it wasn't really. So it's like, did they slip him something? He still can't punk out right now, even though he's just been the whole night's just been him getting fucked with and almost got killed in a drag race. I don't think, yeah, she's attractive, but it's not worth it. I'd leave. But not Michael. It's time to drink from a mysterious chalice and jump off a cliff.
Yeah.
Well, it was a bridge. Very, very weird hazing ceremony.
Yeah. But no,
So,
he's in the group, basically, kind of.
yeah, he's in this group now. What this group is, we don't know. Over the next few days, though, Michael starts undergoing some noticeable changes. He starts sleeping during the day. He starts acting like a douchebag, and his reflection is disappearing. The brother at one point notices that Michael's shadow or his reflection is fading. It's
Yeah.
transparent, but he doesn't tell mom, not yet anyway. So we find out that a few days later, Michael watches David and his group kill a bunch of partygoers, and they tempt him to do what they say. They say they need to feed. They show him their vampire form. They're vampires.
Yeah.
They show their vampire faces, and then right in front of them, they kill a whole bunch of partygoers, and it's saying, "Feed, Michael, feed. You know, become one of us." At this point, Michael's been like levitating. He doesn't like the sun, but he's not a full-on vampire yet. In order to do that, he has to feed,
Yeah, and he hasn't
and
done that yet.
but he refuses to. He hasn't done that yet, and so that is Michael's story up to this certain point. Now, while all that's going on, we have Sam, his younger brother, and Sam, yeah, and he befriends a pair of comic book store employees, and then he proves himself by having a nerd off. He had to kind of prove himself by talking about Superman knowledge and saying this issue number. This is rare. There's only five in existence, and I enjoyed that because it looked like they were just like sizing each other up. Okay, this guy's a nerd. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Now, did they work at the comic book store?
No, I think they are just other kids in the town.
They were just in the town.
Yeah. The
Okay.
Frog Brothers, one played by Corey Feldman, who the entire movie was trying to sound like a tough guy, like action hero,
Yeah, but it's
which would
Corey
make me
Feldman.
chuckle at times, but also kind of took me out of the movie, but still.
I think he's always kind of just played that kind of character.
Yeah.
Or no, well, the only other, well, 2 years before this, he was Mouth in the Goonies.
Yeah.
He was not kind of, he kind of acted the same, similar.
Yeah.
But they're trying to push this one particular comic book onto Sam about vampires, and he's like, I don't like horror books, horror comics.
Have a
And
vampire dick.
he's like,
Horror guys.
this town has a secret, obviously. One night, Michael's babysitting Sam, and the dog, sensing the vampirism that Michael was displaying and the fact that it looked like he was about to attack him, attacks Michael. The dog attacks Michael, and then that's when we see the whole, you have no reflection, Michael. No, oh, Edgar and Alan,
Edgar and
by the way, are the names.
yeah. So
Yeah.
when they gave him the comic, they put their phone number on the back of it, and so he goes and calls them. They're just like, "Yeah, kill your brother."
Yeah, you gotta off the dude.
Yeah.
And well, he refuses to do that, but they said, all right, well, if you can't kill your brother, we need to kill the head vampire.
Yeah.
And if we kill the head vampire, then everybody should go back to normal. You know, classic vampire rules.
Yeah.
So at first, they think it is Max, and Max is a person who is dating their mother at the time. Her story will come in a little bit.
Yeah, he owns the video store.
Yes. So they set up a dinner, try to give him a test, see if he likes garlic, see if he has a reflection, but it comes off looking like they're just trying to ruin mom's date.
Yeah.
So now they go, all right, the guy passed the vampire test. Obviously, the head vampire must be David. David is the one who's the head of
Of like the group, yeah.
the head of the group, so that's obviously him. He's the one who's been fucking with Michael all night. It's probably him.
Yeah, not
So
gonna lie, the first time I watched this movie at this point, I was like, obviously the head of vampire is not gonna be David. But I went in my mind, I was like, it'd be such a great twist if the head vampire was Star.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
it's like she's just pretending to be this damsel.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, Star is the name of the honeypot.
Yeah.
So now it's time to try to take out David. But luckily, because Michael was there the other night, he knows. All right, they'll be sleeping now. Here's where their hideout is. So Edgar Allan and Sam go with a wooden stake, and I don't know if they were just guessing which one might have been David because they stab one of the vampires that are hanging upside down.
Yeah, because I don't think, like, because those three went to kill the vampires while, Matthew saves Star and little child vampire out of there. And so I'm guessing they wouldn't know who was David. So Corey Feldman just stabs one.
Just
Kills
stabs
him.
one.
Wasn't David, but he kills him.
They must have assumed that when you kill a vampire, they die silently. Because I don't know, they had no backup plan. As soon as they stabbed that one vampire and it let out its shriek and
Yeah.
woke all of them up,
They all freaked out, yeah.
they all freak out and run out. I mean, they managed to get out, but David's like, I'm gonna get your ass tonight.
Yeah.
Soon as the sun goes down, and that is Sam's story up to this point.
Yeah.
Now the last person, what's going on with Mom? All right, so throughout the movie, Mom befriends and starts dating this local video guy, video store owner named Max. At some point, Sam discovers Mike's secret. Sam comes to the conclusion that Max is probably the head vampire since he has some similar things going on with him that Michael does, like he's active at night and what have I forget, he said something else, but
And he
he's like
has a
he
dog, and in the comics it says that vampires will keep a werewolf to protect him during the day.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Yeah.
So, and he does have a dog.
And when mom went over there to try to apologize about the date, the dog almost, mauled her to death.
Mauled her to death, so.
Yeah.
So Mom's basically just she's trying to go out and have she's gone on multiple dates so far, failed attempts with Max. The kids, to her, the kids are just acting out and acting strange. And like, you're just upset that you think I'm trying to replace your father, and I haven't been on a date in, I guess, at least since the divorce.
Yeah, they're just acting out because the divorce, and she moved him from Phoenix to this random ass city. Yeah.
So the mom is just there, to be kind of like a we need to protect mom kind of thing, and B, she's dating Max.
Yeah.
And so they're on their third date, and her and Max, I believe, are off at his place for dinner.
Yeah.
And that is what's going on with Mom. Now the night converges all three stories. All right, so now we have a dead vampire and an angry, pissed off David.
And he still
And
got war on his side.
yeah, so, and now we have Team Michael, who has the Frog, is it Frog Brothers?
Frog Brothers, yeah.
Frog Brothers, Sam, and Star is also kind of there, not doing much, but she is Team Michael. And then a house attack comes in, and you get some fun vampire death.
Yeah.
They all load up. They have holy water, water pistols. They have stakes. They
Bathtub
have
filled with holy water.
bathtub filled with holy water. They're ready for these vampires, and they come in one at a time. You get one gets shot in the chest with a bow and arrow and goes right into a stereo and blows up. That was my favorite kill of the movie.
One gets attacked by the dog and pushed into a bathtub of holy water. Yeah.
Good Nanook. Nanook was the name of the dog. Good Nanook.
Good. Yeah.
Good Nanook. And meanwhile, David and Michael are duking it out. Michael gets the upper hand on David, throws him into some deer antlers, and kills him.
Yeah, and this is kind of like the first time you see Michael and like looking like an actual vampire.
Yeah. So he kills Mike. He kills David, and he's like, "I'm still this vampire." He was obviously not the
Yeah, him and
head.
Star like were still saying like, yeah, that obviously didn't work.
Yeah.
Mom and
Now Mom and Max come back because Mom senses trouble at home.
yeah, and the house is destroyed when she walks in.
She comes in. She's like, "Oh my God, what happened in here? This place is ruined. Where's your brother? And who are these kids?"
Yeah, and Max walks straight to David and he's like, it was my boy's fault. They were acting up.
Yeah, turns out Max really is head vampire.
Yep. Okay.
And his whole attempt was he wanted to turn Michael and Sam, and then once they're turned into vampires, the mother would have no choice but to become his bride, and they would be this one big vampire family.
Yeah.
And the reason why we know this is because he monologues and tells us.
Yeah.
And so he gets Mom, and he's getting ready to bite her in the neck. And then out of nowhere, where's Grandpa been this whole night? This is Grandpa's house. He's been on a date. That they lied about. He's been on a date. He's now coming home, but he comes home by ramming his car right through the living room and into Max.
Yeah, how Grandpa knew what was going on? No fucking idea.
Because he gets out the car. Mom is shook. We have Michael, who's now back to normal, and Grandpa just goes to his fridge, grabs a root beer out of the fridge, and he's like, "One thing I could never stand about Santa Clara is all the damn vampires."
So you're
So.
telling me, Grandpa, that you knew that this town had a vampire problem, yet you let your daughter and her kids move there.
Well, they needed a place to bunk.
Yeah, but I
They
tell.
do make it a point to say, "You did move to the murder capital of the world."
Yeah.
And he was like, "Are you serious, Grandpa? Then why are we here?"
Right.
But it ends on a light note like that, a little funny line like that, and that's The Lost Boys.
That is the loss.
This movie drips 80s.
You know what? I actually got, like, for a movie made in 87, it felt like it kind of had a 90s vibe to it.
I can see that, a little bit of each.
Like, yeah, it was that merging time between, like, the 80s and 90s type of vibe.
That era.
Yeah.
And I think I made a note here saying I think the 80s had the perfect movies that were centered around like preteens and teenagers.
Yeah.
I was thinking like Goonies, this movie, The Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
Like that for that era got I think teens and that I'm not annoyed by those teens and those kids.
Yeah. Like, that was going to be my second choice if I did see the Princess Bride, is we were going to do the Breakfast Club.
That would have been a good pick too.
Also got Ferris Bueller's Day Off, so.
I was so happy to get both of these movies just because I just love that time period of movies.
Yeah.
Just fun. That was the name of the game today when I was watching these. It was just fun day.
Yeah.
Did you have a scene or a death of the movie?
Probably the vampire getting knocked into a tub of holy water.
Yeah, I'd like the
Also, the
practical
scene
mask.
where they got the holy water was a pretty funny scene where they just break into a church in the middle of a christening
Just
and start
grab all the
kicking
holy
holy
water.
water. Yeah.
That must have been a lot of trips because enough to fill a bathtub?
Well, I think you just
You just need
get
to
like a
pour in
whole
the.
bunch of water, and then you put a little bit of holy water in it and makes the rest of it like holy water, you know?
No. It's just one little drop, it'll make the whole batch holy.
Yeah. I'm not
I'm
too
not gonna
clear on the
really
rules of
question
holy
the law.
water, yeah, but
I'm not really questioning the logistics.
yeah.
So yeah, when was the last time you said it's been years since you saw this movie, right?
I was probably in high school last time I seen it.
Do you think your feelings on it have stayed the same or improved or went down?
I say it's probably stayed the same.
All right. Well, why don't you get us kicked off with the breakdown then and tell me what you thought of it?
All right, technicals for a movie made in 87, thought the effects and the camera shots are done pretty well. So I gave it 8. Yeah, I gave it 8 on it.
You gave it an 8.
An 8, yeah.
Okay. I gave it a 7.7.
7.7. Okay.
I love the soundtrack to it. It
Soundtrack.
started off with Strangers. People are strange when you're a stranger.
Yeah.
Faces look ugly when you're alone. I like that song.
Yeah.
And a lot of the saxophonists in this one got work.
Yeah.
And you know who directed this, right?
Not off the top of my head, but it
It's
was.
Joel Schumacher, the same guy who did Batman and Robin with Mr. Freeze.
Oh, that one. Oof.
And I just thought it was funny because you could tell by some of these set pieces that it was a lot of it was over dramatic,
Yeah.
which is, I guess, his style, but for some reason it worked in this one, but not in Batman.
Yeah. Also
And
did St. Elmo's Fire.
oh, he did?
Yeah.
I didn't know he did that one too. I will say that one thing that did look a little goofy was whenever the vampires abduct somebody, you don't see them grab, you just see a person like just get kind of yeeted into the air.
Yeah.
I don't know, that just kind of seemed a little funny to me, but I mean other than that it was, 7.7, I think it was pretty good.
Yeah. And then for story, I gave it an 8.3.
Okay.
It's a good story, like you said, like three main stories that all converge into one, but still stays relatively easy to follow.
It's not even like told as in like three stories all converge. I just thought that was just the easier way for me to kind of keep track of it.
Yeah.
I gave it a 7.9.
All right.
It's classic vampires with the classic vampire rules. Even down to the you couldn't you're not allowed to come into the house unless you're invited kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think the 80s had just the best movies centered around teenagers. They weren't annoying. Everybody, it was fun.
Yeah. And then enjoyment gave it a 7.7.
Okay. I gave it an 8.
Okay.
I think it's the perfect runtime, just an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Fun setup. It's just you're in this place, there's vampires, here are your vampire rules, and it's just a fun watch for me.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous, but it's also fun. Even to I thought the end, the ending is pretty ridiculous. Grandpa drives his car into the house, kills the guy, and then says, "Oh, all the damn vampires." I'm like, "Wah, wah." That was a little goofy, but I still dug it.
Yeah, so for you gave it a 23.8 out of 30, and I gave it a 24.1 out of 30.
Yeah, so both bangers of a choice.
Oh, yeah.
One thing we didn't do it for Princess Bride, even though I'd be anxious to hear. Can we do a couple of bad reviews for both of these movies real quick
All right.
from the Ultimatum Meter? Because I'm anxious to hear what people had bad to say about Princess Bride.
Yeah, so Princess Bride, so people know, on the tomato meter got a 96, on the popcorn meter got a 94.
Everybody pretty universally agrees that it's a good movie, except for a few people, apparently.
Let's see if I can find any. All right, so Armon White from National Review.
Armand White?
Yeah.
I know who that is.
Do you really?
I know who Armand White is. Go ahead.
What's unacceptable about this threadbare fantasy? It's contemporary irrelevance. Reiner and Goldman betray the instructional tradition that fables and legends pass on.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I get what you're saying, but that was also kind of like the point of the movie.
All right, what's another one? I was looking up Armand White. I might be getting him mixed up with somebody else. Yeah. The guy who I'm thinking of is an older white guy. This is very much a black man. So I think I got him mixed up with someone else.
Everything I'm bringing up is a good review.
Okay. Well, then that's good then. Yeah, it's universally beloved except for that one guy.
Yeah, just one person who probably just wanted to say something negative to say something negative.
Which I understand. We were reviewers in our first year once.
Yeah. All right. So The Lost Boys on the tomato meter got a 75%, and on the popcorn meter got an 85%.
Okay. Also pretty well liked.
Yeah. Both these movies pretty well received. And then you got James Beardarelli
Yeah, what's wrong, James?
from Real Views. A story that starts with promise is peppered with strong performances, especially from Kiefer Sutherland, and seems to be going somewhere, devolves into formulaic disappointment.
I can kind of see what he means.
Yeah. Like, I guess he just didn't like the ending.
I mean, it did turn into a extreme Home Alone
Yeah.
when they all just came in, and I mean, but I honestly, for the buildup that they had, I don't know how else. I don't know what the other conclusion would have been.
Right, exactly. Oh well. And then you got Mike Massey from Gone with the Twins. This Joel Schumacher directed picture is so devoid of surprises, authentic thrills, and effective comedy that it's essentially just a pitiful cobbled together bore. How are you bored during this movie?
this guy, Joel Schumacher.
Yeah.
Wait, say the first part again.
This Joel Schumacher directed picture is so devoid of surprises, authentic thrills, and effective comedy.
I'm trying to think of where, like, there wasn't really any. I mean, the Frog Brothers are kind of comedic reliefs, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think they fit within.
The movie.
They fit within the movie, but. Yeah, like you said, how are you bored when you're watching this? Even if you think the premise is dumb, it's not a boring movie.
Yeah. And then you got Jeffrey M. Anderson from Combustible Celluloid. The two parts never click together, and neither by itself is very good. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
Was gonna say the two parts of what?
Yeah, that's all it says. Sir, your review makes no sense.
Right, you got any more or just one more in you?
All right. Pete Croatta from filmcritic.com. The Lost Boys is not a movie you want to put in a time capsule or even revisit unless your name happens to be Corey. Okay.
Yeah, I guess the dude has an issue with Corey Feldman.
Yeah. And
I think it's a perfect capture of that era.
then Sarah Chauncey from real.com, 2 out of 5.
That's all. All
That's all.
right, well, hey, I respect you for just being short and sweet to the point.
Yeah. And now, Chris, I do believe it is your job to pick another double feature.
All right,
Try to
so
top this one.
how many more do we have each?
Probably about three more each, maybe.
Okay. All right, well, I've been trying to figure out a way to get us to review this movie. It's but it was no way for me to until now we start doing these double features.
Okay.
So I'm actually taking us I'm probably going to jump back into the 80s at some point, but I'm taking one last dip back to the 50s.
Okay.
We're going to review one of my all-time favorite Disney movies, live action, Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
So Darby O'Gill.
Darby O'Gill and the Little People.
All right, you might have to send me up the spelling for that one
Be
later.
get ready to go to Ireland.
All right. Is that a
And
horror movie or no?
no, that is not the horror movie, although there will be a funny story about that when we review it because it was probably my first horror experience as a kid.
Okay.
And I've never seen the Tom Cruise version, but I have a deep fondness for the 1999 movie The Mummy.
Okay.
So in 1959, they also had The Mummy with Imhotep. So I wanted to review The Mummy.
The Mummy from 1959. Got it.
And Darby O'Gill and the Little People. That one, I hope you like that one. That's one of my favorite live action Disney movies.
All right. All right. And that is it for this week's double feature. I want to thank you guys for listening. Have a good week, everybody.
Prepare to die. Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Body Bag Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe and leave us a comment as to what you'd like to hear us review or any horror movie topics you'd like to hear us rant and rave about.
And while you're at it, you can find us on Twitter at Body Bag Pod and on Instagram at Body Bag Podcast.
Thanks, and we'll see you next time.